Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, my bunnies. It's Arden. Okay, before we get to this week's episode, I just have to say, oh my God, you guys, thank you so much. First of all, for everybody who came to the live show, the one that was on Dynasty Typewriter, it was so fun. Dynasty Typewriter, which is where we did our draft picks. And the only reason I don't think we're going to do draft picks for the season is because we know who she picks. And then we know that Tayshia's coming and we don't know her batch of guys. So, you know, 2020 is the upside down. All bets are off in 2020. But it's the same theater that we did it at. And I don't know if you guys watched it. I feel like a lot of you were there. They do such a great job making... You know, what is essentially, for most people, would be the equivalent of like a Zoom show. Actually, to me, I think I felt like I got to have a real live book launch. I feel like I was at a party with my friends. I felt excited that you guys were all there. And, you know, I thought Lauren Lapkus was a delight. Brian Safi, Debbie Ryan, Bachelor of the Year, Rob Benedict, my brother, all of it. So it really meant so much to me. But even bigger than that, just the support of everybody just through this whole book process. And I bet a lot of you have them in your hot little paws right now. And it just means so much to me. I mean, truly, just through this whole journey, I have not felt alone, even though I have not left my garage. And I hope you all love it. Please email in. Let me know if you guys have finished it and you liked it. Feel free to leave a review on Amazon or Goodreads. That's helpful. And I'm thinking, I mean, look, I'm such a psycho about COVID. I'm so afraid of it. I've really been socially distancing. But, like, I can't believe I can't go on tour. I can't believe I can't go meet everybody. So my brain... You know, I've been trying to figure it out. I'm like, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way, at least in the Southern California area, like that I could do a small mini Little Miss Little Compton outdoor book tour. Like, there's got to be a way that I could go to like indie bookstores during the day, do like a in the parking lot signing socially distanced, or like I could park my freaking car, put a little table out. You guys do like a drive-by book signing. And then maybe, like, do a show outside at night, socially dis... I don't know. I don't know how that works. Or do some reading. I don't know. But I'm like, there's got to be a way that I could, A, not get COVID, B, not get and spread COVID. Like, there's got to be a way to do an outdoor book tour, because it's killing me that I can't go see all of you. I don't know. Or like, does anybody have like a nice driveway I can park in? And we do a drive-by thing, like I do a drive-by book signing, like, and I park in your driveway and then perform in your lawn. Does anybody have a nice spacious lawn? Should we do 5 fans around Southern California? I don't know. That's just, I'm just thinking out loud. I'm spitballing. Guys, now that I'm an author, now that I'm an authoress, this is exactly what John Grisham does. So that's A, number one. Number two, just because the book's out doesn't mean I'm not going to still give away freaking T-shirts or totes or cat puzzles. And again, if I've called out your name and we've gotten a bunch of emails in, just when I call you out, just email in and be like, girl, I want a T-shirt, da-da-da-da. Everybody's entered. Here I am. That's the sound of me going through the bag. I'm going to go deep in. I'm going deep in. I'm doing giveaway. I'll give away three today. I'm going to do – and you just email me and you tell me, girl, I want a tote. Girl, kitty cat, I want a T-shirt. My friend, I want a crazy cat puzzle. You tell me. I'm running low on cat puzzles, so if you want a cat puzzle, this is your chance. Obviously, I'm running low because they're fantastic. First winner is Kate Little Broberg. You are the first winner of a tote or a puzzle or a T-shirt. I don't know. I don't know what your journey is. I don't know what you want. Number two. Here we go. Second person to get a pre-order is, Kelly O'Rourke's friend, Monica. So, Kelly, you entered, and your friend Monica is the one who won. So you tell me what Monica wants and tell me where to send it, rosepodcast@gmail.com. Third person who won a tote or a T-shirt or a Meet the Authors puzzle is Catherine Oliver. All right, so that's Catherine Oliver, Katie Little Broberg, and Kelly O'Rourke. It's the K. It's the I will not. They're all K's. I don't want to say triple K because it's not something that I want to support, but I want to support these ladies. I'm going to support Katie, Catherine, and Kelly. So thank you again, rosepodcast@gmail.com. Email me. Tell me what you want. Also, we really appreciate you guys have been leaving your reviews and stuff, all of that, your reviews on iTunes. We got a couple great new ones this week. And I promise, I know you're like, girl, stop talking. Let me get to your episode. That's what's happening. But here's a really fun one. Again, I asked and you delivered. You're like, I will give you what you want, my friend. Okay, this is from Ned Fletcher. 5 stars, tool for your sanity. I have never watched the shows discussed by the hysterical host and her rotating panel of guests. It doesn't matter. Listen now for the ultimate escape from 2020. Love you guys. Ned, can I tell you, you're not alone. We get emails, quite a few emails, and from listeners who do not watch The Bachelor but have not missed a podcast. And can I tell you, you guys all get special treasure medal of honors, and I'm fascinated by it, and I love your lane of the highway. I don't ever want you to watch an episode. I love that this is your podcast. And I'm so thankful that we're of service to you and that you're a part of our journey. Like, you are absolutely like front row members of the club. And that's the best thing, is that I like to think visually you couldn't pick any of them out of a lineup. Someday when we do a live podcast again, I would love to flash, have some of you guys there, put on screen like 4 people. One of whom has never actually been in the franchise, and have you guess. Or maybe have 3 people not in the franchise, 1 person in the franchise. I think that's how we do it. And then you have to guess which person on the screen was actually in the franchise. I think that's a really fun game for our listeners who listen and don't watch. Here's another review that I loved. 5 stars. 5 stars, subject, Feeling Thorny by A512. Y'all, this is the podcast. Now I sound like my insatiable character, Regina Sinclair. Y'all, this is the podcast. I listen to too many podcasts, ranging from true crime, self-help, scripted dramas, but this is the one. I feel like Arden is my friend, and her honest and honesty and vulnerability has helped me to open up too. That's nice. I even subscribe to the Patreon episodes because I just can't get enough. Here's the thing, though. These Feeling Thorny podcasts have been amazing. I've been wanting to pre-order Arden's book for a while, but this put me over the edge. Love this comedy troupe. My good. Thank you, A512. I'm so grateful for all of the wonderful responses we've gotten to these. And this is the last one that we have recorded right now, but we'll do more in the future. You know, look, it's nice to like take a pause, because guess what? In 2 weeks, we're all getting back into that crazy hot tub filled with hairless people looking for love. But this time they're at the La Quinta Resort and it's 190 degrees and it's like hairless, horny stew. And we're going to watch them. And so this, let's just keep it classy in honor of book release week. And you can get it. Guys, I saw on Amazon right now, if you order it today, you can get it in the mail tomorrow. Here's what I'm saying. It's nice to do. We're doing classy. So this week's Feeling Thorny episode, which is our last one before there'll be a week off. So if you want, go to Patreon. If you're like, I'm jonesing, honey, go to Patreon. Some people have emailed in about the Bachelor archive. Like, make sure you just create an account. If you're going to go watch The Bachelor at New Zealand or any of the Australia episodes, which some of those are on HBO Max, but create an account. You just have to make a password and then you get access. Okay. So this person, some of our newer listeners who started during iHeart don't know this person, but this is an OG. This was like my co-host for the first year or two. And then she got a staff writing job on One Day at a Time, but she's going to be with us in our premiere episode coming up. It'll be up October 15th with Padgett Brewster and Rob Benedict. Erin Foley is, for those of you who don't know, one of my favorite stand-up comedians. She is such a smart joke writer. She's such a hard worker. She's such a fun person. We have laughed till tears have streamed down our faces. We're both from Rhode Island. She is such a good friend. And I really respect and admire her as a creator, as a talent, and just as a person. And she is so freaking funny. I mean, this woman is funny. And I'm so excited for our newer listeners to get to know her, so you'll know who's joining us in the premiere. And for our OG people who've been with us through the whole thing. Guys, Erin's back. Erin's back, right? Thank you, pandemic. You brought me Erin. So, all right. That's it. We're not going to be here next week. I'm going to miss you guys. And I really, really, really appreciate, again, like, honestly, all of you showing up, the support. I want to hear what you thought of the book. I really want to hear. And that's partially why I want to go on tour, because I want to also be able to do readings and talk to you guys and have you guys ask questions. Like, I want to do stuff and be near you. And I want to figure out a way to do it socially distanced outside, because I am a psychopath, and I promise you I will be an 18 mask and probably some weird visor and gloves and a Lysol bubble. All right, enough of me, blah blah blah. Here is, without further ado, my friend Erin Foley. Bye, I'll see you in October.
Welcome to Will You Accept This Rose, a production of iHeartRadio.
These are so good.
I just got one little question.
Randy.
Will you accept this role?
I do, I accept it. Thank you for asking the first. Thank you for asking.
Will you accept this role?
You know what? I'm comfortable with the fact that it's just on my knee. No, I see that, which made it like actually dramatic for me. Like it's a little more.
Will you accept this role?
That's not just the
to
song.
To poke it out of Rose.
We're not fully in the mood yet. Get ready.
Uh-oh.
Get ready.
I can't wait. I'm giddy.
You know what time it is.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You know it's time for Arden to get a little close.
I'm gonna get close.
And a little thorny. Oh, well, Arden's gonna go one-on-one. Gonna be high energy fun. Convos are gonna be super real. She wants to get with you in all the feels.
No.
Feeling thorny. Yeah, feeling thorny.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Oh,
feeling thorny.
Yeah.
Feeling thorny.
Yeah.
With Aden Marie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will accept your thorny.
Feeling thorny.
Can you handle that? Hi!
Ew.
Welcome to a very special Feeling Thorny Morning with Arden Marine, a little offshoot of Will You Accept This Rose. My name is Arden Marine, and it's a rainy day here in the clubhouse, and I am here with somebody I'm so excited to be sitting with.
I'm thrilled.
She's a Virgo, so we're organizing our course.
Yep.
And I missed her so much. She looks great. She's got a nice cowl neck on. She's got the bone structure. She talks about somebody else's bone structure. Let me say, when you talk about Paget's bone structure, you are eliminating the fact that all you need to do is look right in the mirror, my friend.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, my platonic life partner, Aaron Foley.
Hey! I've missed you so much.
Oh my God, we've missed you. We're here, of course, with Tana and Katie. I don't know what Anna just drank, but something happened.
Was it a
hot tea? Hot
tea. That was either
a
cold or hot.
Go slow on the notes, so it's not so because I'm so ADD. Aaron Foley. First of all, I've missed you. Congratulations. For those of you out there who don't know, Aaron Foley is now a staff writer on One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
One Day at a Time.
How does that theme song go again?
Well, Gloria Estefan did the reboot of it, and it's awesome.
What was the original one?
That's all I know.
I want you to know that for this reboot, I went into audition to play the part of Schneider.
No.
Did I read that with you? Did I run it with you?
No, you never told me that.
I went in. I ran it with Jordan. I got the sides, and I was like, surely there's been a surely. For those children out there listening, back in the day, there was a show, an original version of
yes.
One Day at a Time. There was this gentleman named Schneider who wore like a denim jeans, denim vest. He always had like a Burt Reynolds mustache and like a cigarette rolled into his sleeves. And I can't handle it. I'm so sorry.
He's the handyman.
But he was like the epitome of masculinity. And I was like, why would you cast? Why?
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not going to book this. And they're like, well, we might go another way. And then I had to go in an audition to play Schneider. And like, of course, they cast a man.
Well, I think I can't speak for them because I would have cast you as the anybody.
Thank you.
But the whole, it was such a, you know, hard right reboot that I think there were, you know, it went from, you know, white people in the Midwest to a Cuban American family in Echo Park. So
right.
I think they were just trying to turn everything on its head. But it's been a dream. And I'm going to try to now write anything I can to get Arden Marine on the show.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I can play Schneider's like his twin, speaking of twins. And we'll get to, so for those of you who are like, why are we doing this? Why a side offshoot podcast, Arden? Why, like, first of all, I like getting to know my friends more. Like, I like, it's very rare in this day. It's very easy just to get hang and joke around and like you get to know people as you go. But it's very rare that you get to sit and really have a one-on-one interview with somebody. And this is leading up to, and you've been so supportive, but this is leading up to the launch of my book.
So excited!
Called Little Miss Little Compton. And you can pre-order it now on Amazon. And I'm begging you, please pre-order it now. And even your brain, you're like, maybe I'll do that next week. Like,
do it now,
do
people.
It now.
She do wrote it, a book.
I wrote a fucking book. And like, think of it as like a present for your future self. Because you order it now, and then when it arrives, you're going to be like, oh my God, right, I ordered this.
Yes.
You bring it to any show that I'm at, I will sign it for you. Like, truly, I am so grateful that you guys are buying it. Apparently, my dream is to get on the bestseller list, and apparently you need to sell 8,000 copies.
I will rob a bank and buy 8,000 copies.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
I've always wanted to rob a bank safely.
You know what? You've talked about that a lot in your stand-up.
Yeah.
Well, writing the book, it was an interesting thing because I don't like normally to sit around thinking about like childhood and school and family and stuff like that. And like, but it was an interesting process. And I'm like, I'm fascinated by how all my funny friends came to be.
Aliens, straight up aliens.
They came down.
Just hatched right before I met you.
I am obsessed with your mom.
Oh my God, she's the best.
How is she doing?
Good.
Are they in Florida?
No, we've moved them to Texas.
That happened.
Yes, that happened a couple months ago.
For those of you people out there listening, tell us a little bit about your mom.
I always put them together, Mary and Dick Foley. But Mary in particular is Mary Agnes Kathleen Foley.
That's the most Irish name I've ever heard.
Yeah, it doesn't get more Irish than that. I sometimes when I say her full name, I used to put her maiden name in. Yeah. And then
what was it?
Oh, I can't say because she heard me say it one time, just like in passing. Yeah. And she's like, people can then figure out and then take my money. Oh. And I was like,
okay, that's fair.
Okay, sure.
I mean, if somebody's coming on a Bachelor podcast to take your mom's money,
right?
They really want money.
It made me laugh so hard, but now I've dropped her maiden name for security purposes. She's $1.95. Baloney.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Did you, how much of your childhood, because I grew up in Rhode Island,
yes.
And a lot of the book is about that. How much of your childhood was in Rhode Island?
We moved there right before my 12th birthday. So right before 7th grade.
From where?
We went from New York to Connecticut to Rhode Island.
First question, New York City?
Nope, not New York City. I was born in Long Island. Dad is Brooklyn. Mom's Long Island. They met in Manhattan, lived in Manhattan for a while. Then she was like, I'm going to have a baby.
Yes.
And then they moved back to Long Island because by that time my dad, it was like that very kind of famous merge of, Brooklyn people into Long Island.
Okay.
Whatever families, pricing, neighborhood stuff. So there was kind of a big exodus.
Okay.
And so they moved back to Long Island.
Yeah.
I was born in Long Island till 8, 9 years in Connecticut, then Rhode Island. But Rhode Island is the best.
It's the best, right? It's the funniest state.
Yeah.
So you were there watching Patrice Woods. You were watching Mario Hilario on the local news. You were there.
Oh my God, I forgot about all these things.
During the
Buddy Cianci.
Buddy Cianci, the great. I talk about him in the book. The greatest mayor of Providence. He was a convicted felon, got out, and got reelected.
Got stuff done. Got dead bodies everywhere.
He had an off-duty police officer drive him over to his like girlfriend lover's house, and he beat him up with a fireplace and iron, and put a cigar out on his dick.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about.
And
he hit him over the head with an ashtray. Okay, and then you were also there probably for
the
Sonny Von Bulow. The Von Bulow, remember that?
Oh,
that was all in the news.
The coma. And all the, Great Gatsby being filled in the Newport mansions.
We almost got to have, they were trying to get Witches of Eastwick to Little Compton. And I was like, this, I'm going to get discovered. And then the church women were like, no, there's sex scenes in the church. And so the puritanical, they shut it down and went up to Cohasset Mass. And I had such a grudge at Cohasset, like for like 15 years that like my chance was lost to like get to hang out with Cher and Jack Nicholson as an awkward 11-year-old.
Oh.
That was my time.
Well, it's still, I mean, right now to hang out with both of them right now.
Right? She looks amazing. I saw her on Dancing with the Stars the other night.
He's a little cuckoo, but.
Okay, so you grew up in Rhode Island. How was moving there in junior high? Because that's kind of that's a tough state. Did you go to public school?
Yeah, we went to, it was a real battle between Mary and Dick because, and this is, I just like to preface this next sentence is, I did not know I was gay.
Okay.
But when we moved in 7th grade.
Love it.
My mom scouted out the best public school district, and that was South Kingstown. South Kingstown Public High School was a great high school. And the neighboring one was Narragansett. I wanted to go to Narragansett because it had fast pitch softball.
Right.
Again, not gay.
Right.
So I was pleading the case. My dad and I were like, it's fast pitch.
Right.
South Kingstown, better school academically.
One of
the best in the state. Slow pitch. So boring.
Right. You're like, I want fast pitch.
Mom won, clearly. Right. We went with academics.
Do you think you would have come out earlier?
Shattered my softball
would
dreams.
Would you have come out earlier if you got
I don't know, because I did play slow pitch for another 6 years.
Right.
Still had no idea. But I mean, that's super gay.
Did you have a boyfriend in high school?
Oh my God, hold on. Something's coming up. Is it feelings? No. I did the thing where I pined after a dude, and then as soon as he liked me, I was like, nah, get away.
I was kind of like that.
I did that for a long time.
I was kind of like that.
Yeah, but I was gay.
Right, that's true. Right.
You were being selective.
I think I also just had such low self-esteem. Yeah. I had a terrible dad, so I was like, I'm a monster. You can't see behind the veil. I'm only fun at a party, and then you get to know me, and I'm the worst. I'm a garbage, and everybody knows it.
Well, that's not even remotely true.
No, now I know that. I know that now, but at the time, I was like, this day away, I'm the worst. No, you
did
have...
Did you go to Little Compton High?
We didn't have a high school. So we had... I went to the public school in town for grammar school, and then the high school was Middletown, which was like an hour commute
over the bridge,
and it got like a 1-star in academics. And so my mom was like, she had a bad education. She was from Long Island. She went to Bayside High. And like, I didn't get an education, so I'm gonna, she goes, I, in my mind, high school is where your brain is malleable. She's like, I'm going to run out of money for your college, but I'm going to send you to the best high school I can send you to.
That's a great idea.
And she sent me, she took like a third mortgage out and like sent me to boarding school.
Where? In Connecticut?
It's in Concord, Massachusetts, Middlesex School, which is super preppy, but it was great because everyone was off playing lacrosse, which I wasn't, but no one was in. They had this beautiful theater and no one was interested in it. So
no
I got
way.
To like write plays because like, they weren't my people, but like the beauty of that was I had access to this facility and I got to like basically go to college at 14.
Wait, did you know that you wanted to perform and write and all that from a little baby Arden?
Oh, like 4 and 5 year old Arden. There was a girl in kindergarten that moved down the street who was from New York, and I actually talk about this in the book. Like, I call her a different name in the book, but her name was Courtney, and she moved down the street. Like, and she lived in New York, and she had a commercial agent, and she'd been in like a cereal commercial. And I remember just like grilling her about it and being so jealous, and like sitting my parents down and being like, "You're holding back my career. Like,
no,
we got to move now.
Change my diaper. Yeah. Get me out there."
Yeah, and then my mom was like, "I'm not moving to New York for a 5-year-old." And so she was like, "As soon as you can like live and not get like kidnapped, you can go be my cash cow and like take care of me."
This is fascinating. Yeah. This is why this is such a good idea to do this, because we've been friends forever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so, you know, we're always like, we're doing this project.
Yeah, yeah,
we're
you know, it's interesting.
You and I could get dropped off in the middle of like the desert, and then we'd be like, "Hey, we found a dance party one bottle of water." It's nice to
actually have a chat.
Share some
I love
details.
You so much. I just want to like, I just love you so much. I'm never tired of you. I always want to be
tired of you. Like, that's so adorable.
Like, I always want to be around you. Yeah. Like, you make me crazy. You make my cells crazy in a way that's like, I don't care how tired I am. If you're like, "I'm going dancing," it's like, well, obviously I'm coming with you. Like, I don't care where we are. Yeah. Like, obviously.
It's hard to meet those people as adults.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even when, I don't know, throughout the years, something. And Megan, my twin, she always like, you know, I'm always like, "Oh, I'm doing this or doing that." But I always like, when I talk about you, she goes like, my face goes up. I go, "Oh, Art," and she goes, "Oh, Art," and like when she first started hearing about you, and she's like, "Oh, your fun friend, the fun."
Yes.
Like, she knows, like, "Oh, your fun friend."
We have a similar. There is something. There's like a beauty. You, me, and Lisa Delaros are all the exact same age.
Love her, and I never see her.
She'll be at the dance party on Saturday,
2020. I'm in LA.
Yeah,
I have a life, and now I can actually start. Get like taking care of more friendships.
Yes.
It's just so hard. This stand-up life is, it just feels like I'm like a shitty friend. I'm never home. My back goes out.
That. We're going to go all over the place. And I want to start with this now. Like, you've been, and we're going to come back to the high school stuff. Like, you have been, you're one of my favorite comedians. I respect how hard you work at it. I respect your work ethic with your jokes. And for those of you out there, she's got all sorts of albums you can order and buy.
Deep like, Dive, that's the latest.
But I think you're such a talented stand-up. But you have been on the road consistently. How many years?
I would say consistently probably 8.
That's hard.
8? I would say 8. Actually, maybe probably. I mean, I've been doing stand-up almost 20.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe like 9, maybe 9. Like I've always made it a living, but it's like been stand up, some commercial stuff, some writings, whatever.
Yeah.
But then stand up, like on the road, stand up supporting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been in LA 12 and it was the first couple years trying to figure that out. So I would say like 9 or 10 consistently.
When you were like, "I want to do this for a living," was the dream like, was the dream specifically, I want to be a stand-up?
Yeah, I think I always wanted to do stand-up because I mean, when I got into it, it wasn't, when I was in New York City, it wasn't like, and I'm not, this isn't a shot on anyone that's doing stand-up for, you could do stand-up for whatever reason you want.
Yeah.
But in New York, when you started stand-up, as you know, like, you were a stand-up and you wanted to be a stand-up.
That's right.
I had no acting background. I've never to this day wanted to be in front of a camera acting.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
When people are shoving me out the door with auditions, I'm like, fucking kill me.
Right. So, that's interesting.
So I just started doing stand-up to do stand-up. And then all of a sudden, I just kept going. But the life around it has been difficult. The stand-up has always been fantastic, but
my favorite stand-ups,
it's hard, yeah.
My favorite stand-ups, I think that it purely that was the main goal was to be just, because some, you know, like, I think the best stand-ups, like, that was the dream, was to most, like, the actual stand-up part was that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and I think that the I'll always love and probably go back to like the purity of stand up, of just doing stand up. But I could not, the last couple of years broke me as like a human.
Right.
And that's when I was I can't sustain this. The travel.
Because it's harder and harder.
The travel just broke me and the money and the not making enough
it
money.
It feels like it's harder and harder unless you're at a certain, like, unless you have certain credits.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this has changed. I don't know if this is, it's always been like this, but it feels like that sort of, like, that it's hard to make, to put any money away, even as a headliner, unless you have certain, like, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah. You know what? And this isn't like, woe is me in any way. I chose all these steps. But what you, for stand-up, it's such a clear path of, I've attained all my goals, you know, headlining, theaters, Conan, like you half hours, like it's albums, like it's all very extremely successful.
Right.
However, what you have to pair it with is television.
Right.
Right.
That's
so
right.
In the people, let's just say, or successful stand-ups, if you're, how are people supposed to discover you unless you're literally at that club year after year after year, if you're not on TV?
Right.
So I totally get that formula, but I never could fit into that formula. So the writing was on the wall maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I was like, well, if I don't want to be an actor, like it's just going to be me. The money caps at a certain level.
Yeah.
This is going to be my life. And that never made me happy enough. So I was like, okay, how am I going to figure out this? And that's when I was like, okay, it's got to be with writing.
Well, and I remember that's when we started doing our writers group.
Yeah.
And it's, I can't tell you when I saw that you, I know how hard you've worked on your scripts. And when I saw that you were, because I know you've been staffed on pilots and stuff.
Yeah.
But like when I saw that you were fully staffed on One Day at a Time, I was so happy for you because I feel like you've crossed over, like you've already had enough bites.
Yeah.
And like you clearly have the, you'd be such an asset in any room. And like now you've been vetted. And like I'm so happy that I know this has been your goal and that it'll be fun for you and it's more stability. And like that's awesome.
Yeah. And you know how it is. It's like you have to do like so many different jobs. So like when I, by the way, listeners, Arden had a writing group because she's a fantastic writer. So buy the book immediately. You can
buy
hit
the
pause,
book immediately.
Hit
please
pause,
just
hit
buy
pause,
the book. Just hit pause.
Go
please
get the, go get the book.
Please buy the book.
Okay,
immediately.
Now we're back.
Thank you so much for buying the book.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
It's so cool
you.
That you bought the book.
Brian in Ohio.
Oh my god, Susan.
Oh my
in
god!
Cincinnati.
An hour. You bought it for your sister and for your mom. Thank
Peter
you,
Baker out
oh
of Louisville.
God.
Thanks
oh
for hitting pause and buying the book.
Kika in Tampa. Thank you. I love your new tan and I appreciate it.
Mary Foley trying to figure out where pause is and then asking someone to get the computer on to buy the book.
Thank
for you, Mary.
Elephant tits in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. First of all, you look great. I support your name change. And I appreciate, thank you. I really needed it. Thank you. Thank
wow.
you.
Wow. The phones are lighting
the phones
up,
are
you
lighting
guys.
The phones are lighting up, you guys. The phones
the
are lighting up.
The reviews are in. This
lighting
book changed
up.
My life.
This
Carol.
Book changed my life. Okay, so
anyway, your writing group.
Yes.
I say to Arden, I want to, you know, start writing. I did punch up on a bunch of shows through other comics.
Yeah.
Join your writing group.
Yeah.
And the greatest thing about the writing group is I met Jordan.
Jordan Rollins.
Jordan and I took a pitch out last year. It was like this safe, wonderful space where you're like, I don't know this. I don't know. Like, it's stand-up. You can try.
Yeah,
you know, you can try your jokes. And if they go, fuck off, you go, okay, that wasn't funny. Yeah. But how do you know with the writing? How about the book? Did you send people
Anna read
chapters?
It. Anna did my millennial pass to make sure I didn't write anything offensive.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
My friend Lisa read it.
Okay.
I ran particularly. It's weird. It's an interesting thing. And then this is going to sound. When I wrote the proposal, my mom was alive.
Yeah.
And the deal closed on the day of her funeral. I got the email. They were hope you're having a great week. Like, you know, so truly, in a weird way, write this book, no one's alive.
Yeah.
But I'm nervous for my brother to read it. I'm not going to lie. Like, there's a weird, there's a weird freedom in that. Like, and it turned, a lot of it is sort of a tribute book, I think, to my mom.
I was just going to say, were so close.
Yeah, it's like a tribute.
So proud.
Yeah. I think she's in it much more than she would have been, in that I've had an insane amount of people email me funny stories about her. And I think I didn't realize what a unique, I just thought everybody's mom was like that. Like, I didn't know that I had sort of a different mom. And so I think it actually completely changed the book. But
that's wonderful.
It's I do think the timing of it is amazing. Like, it's a different book. And but it is picking and choosing who to show it to so that you are making sure and there's an editor that's helping me, you know, at the publishing company.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing of showing it to enough people that you're getting outside eyes, but not so many that you show it to 18 people, they're going to give you 18 different opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. You really have to trust. So it's like a more of a one-on-one relationship with your editor in a way. And then of course, you know, I always say, if I do stand-up stuff, someone's like, oh, do you go through your manager, who I love, but I'm like, no, I go through my funny friends.
It's an interesting, my friend Jacob, I read it through twice with, we read it out loud just to hear it, and I would recommend reading it out loud.
That's
twice.
A good idea.
Reading it out loud really was very helpful.
Yeah.
Awful, you know, but helpful. Yeah.
Did you, when you read it out loud, did you try different accents?
I did. I was like, and then here I am in Little Compton, Rhode Island. Oh, how nice to look like Bob from Stranger Things. You know, like that.
Hello. I come from Little Compton.
Hey, how's your mother? Who fired it? Then I moved to New York City and I lived in Zach Galifianakis' closet.
Oh, my God. That's good. I was wondering if you were going
to
try.
I can't wait to record a book on tape. Can you imagine? Yeah. I was like, no, this is how I speak. I like mine. Hello. My name's Kika.
Butter.
Ooh, I don't know about you, but things are getting so hot in here. I think I gotta take a pee break.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Question. Yes. Who were your comedy idols growing up? Who are your influence? Who were your like little North Star lighthouses in the out there?
Well, I think not knowing that any of this was going to happen,
sure,
because I was a sports crazed person. I never performed.
What did you think you were going to be? What did you want to be?
I just thought I would teach,
okay,
because I loved school and everybody in my family teaches basically. So I was like,
what did you major
in? I could keep
in
going. American Studies.
Great.
Which I loved. And I thought, I'll do that. I like standing in front of people and I like reading.
You've been a great teacher.
So I don't know. And then I moved to Manhattan and I was like, oh, I'll just like fuck around for a bit before I go to grad school. And then, you know, I'm in your house doing
okay,
this.
Wait a minute. So you moved to Manhattan and what happened? Yeah. How'd that happen? What happened?
Well, I'll just say the only like influence was it was my parents were so funny.
Yeah.
And they watched, as a family, we watched Carol Burnett's show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were obsessed. And my dad loved Laurel and Hardy.
Yes.
And we will watch Laurel and Hardy and try to get out of Sunday Mass all the time.
Yes.
So we watched that. I watched a lot with my dad. But then when I was probably college years, late high school, college years, my mom and I would watch every Woody Allen movie,
yes,
to this day. Now, I know.
He's
problematic.
I know.
But
I watched him too.
His movies are
I know. I watched
amazing.
Him. I watched
yeah.
him and my brother. It was nice having an older brother because we watched Monty Python. We watched all the Steve Martin movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Mel Brooks.
You know what I mean? Like, so
amazing,
Airplane. I've seen Airplane 790. You know, and my parents, like, I watched Airplane with my parents. You know what I mean?
I know. I watched terrible. I watched
always,
everything that I shouldn't watch.
Yeah.
I do think having a funny family helps. My family was funny.
Well, of course. I mean, I can't. And the good thing about my parents, too, is like they weren't like stage funny. Like,
yeah,
we had no.
No.
There was no they were just like my dad in particular. He's seriously one of the funniest. Like,
that's how my brother is.
I think I told this, but to this day, I mean, he's like, it's not, everybody goes, you know, whatever. He's very sick. And the last time we were in the hospital, he's in his little gown and he's, you know, it's so hard to obviously
live through
it. It's awful.
Yeah, yeah, it's brutal.
So the doctor goes, you know, through this checklist and I'm standing right next to him trying to like grab my leg to be strong.
It's awful.
And he's like, okay, do you have this? Do you have this? And he's like, do you have a hearing aid? And my dad goes, what? And I literally, like, I'm about to, like, laugh so fucking hard because it's my favorite joke.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I get my sister and my partner on what? 4 times a day.
Yeah.
And the doctor goes, do you have a hearing aid? And I was like, say it again, say it again. Okay. My dad goes, what? Like, and I was like, you know, he's like 80. He's got
his
a little
timing
like,
is amazing.
Cancer, a little gurnt, like, thing on. And I am fucking losing
That's
my
the
mind.
Thing.
And my dad and I are looking at each other like, who the hell is this dude?
That's the thing.
So, I mean, you know, to the day he dies, he's going to be fucking hilarious.
That is truly.
Yeah.
That's the, and there is, I like, there is even a gallows humor. I will say, like, even my mom's funeral weekend, like, the worst fucking thing had just, like, and my brother and I, it was, we would alternate between crying so hard and then laughing, like, because it's so, when we went to, because we didn't go to church, and there was no place to hold the funeral, and we had to go beg the church to let us hold, there's no public places in Little Compton, and in March is too cold to do it outside, there was nowhere to hold it, so we had to beg to get let into the church, and they were like, okay, and then when I was like, can we play music, they're like, of course you can play music, I was like, can we play The Single Ladies by Beyonce, it's her favorite song,
no.
And then my brother believes like, no, you can't play that, and like my brother and I were fucking dying after like that, like,
hysterical.
We were laughing so hard.
Yeah.
In my mind, it seemed like a reasonable request. Like, we were dying, you know? And you're like just sitting there because you're like crazy. But there is something about.
We will build the city of God. Oh, the single ladies.
Oh, the single ladies.
Oh, the single ladies. Oh my God, that's amazing.
Okay, so question.
Yes.
Do you think being a twin has made you funnier? I find twins fascinating.
I think my twin, you know, I know I have like a bigger personality. She's quieter, but she makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't expect it, but I honestly think she's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. So I don't know. Probably she's made me funnier because I just... But I think
Do you talk about being a twin in your stand-up ever?
Rarely. I mean, sometimes.
Do you have a twin language?
We have I think we have like a lot of hand signal. I'm kidding.
If I stab your twin in the leg, will you feel it?
You know what? We should try that.
Let's see.
Wait,
it.
There's a garden hose right there. Try to strangle me.
I'm gonna try to strangle
see
you.
If she texts like I need
let's
air.
That sounds great. All right, text her. Give her my number.
Yeah,
text her. Okay. Give me my number.
Stand by your phone.
Okay, and just see how you feel.
Are you driving?
Just see how you're breathing.
Yeah, I think. Are you now? Tell me if you feel like you're going to be underwater in the next 30 seconds.
What did you when you moved to New York? How did you pay your rent? And what was the first time you did stand up?
When I moved to New York City, I moved in with both my sisters,
yeah,
Tara
did.
And Meeks, and I thought I was getting a. Like sharing a bedroom with Megan, but they had taken in a straggler, Chris, for a couple months before we all realized he was doing blow, like I think in her bathroom. But anyway,
right. Love
it was
this.
New York City. It was a different time.
There was a lot of blow around then. I remember there was a club called Cokie's in Brooklyn.
No way.
Yeah. I lived in
the
New York.
The only
then.
Drug I haven't done.
I've never done Coke either, but I saw
it. Oh, I also haven't done
Andy Dick showed me Coke, and I was like, that feels appropriate. That's
perfect.
Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I've been in parties where I'm passing plates of Coke, but it was the Len Bias, Boston Celtics, first round draft pick, OD'd. Anyway, I never did Coke.
That's the thing. It's like people are like, okay, as advertised, you're going to show me Coke.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anna just passed me Coke.
Cocaine.
What do the young people say? What? Powder of dreams?
Powder of dreams.
I'm not young.
The white candy.
So I lived in Cornelia Street between 4th and Bleecker in an illegal sublet where I had a mattress and I'd push it under the dining room / living room table at night and sleep under the table in a single mattress for the first 4 months. I was 22 having the time of my life.
That's the thing.
I slept on a mattress underneath the dining room table.
Blow
but it was
up
Cornelia Street.
Was it a real mattress?
Full mattress.
Beautiful mattress.
I slided it was just under. Then we'd slide the table out and then slide the table back.
So there's four of you in a one bedroom?
Four of us in a two bedroom. It was kind of a glorified one bedroom with like a crappy wall.
Yeah.
Then Tara went to the summer. She, Theater by the Sea, Matunik, Rhode Island.
Matunik.
That summer she was at grad school. She had the summer off. She's like, get me out of Manhattan. Bartended at Theater by the Sea.
Yeah, she did.
I got her bedroom.
Okay.
Waited tables. I waited tables. That's
where?
How I made a living.
Where? That's hard. I waited tables too. It's brutal.
Oh,
it's the worst.
Oh, God. Where didn't I wait tables?
Waiting tables is hard.
The great thing is I had some crappy jobs, but then I got into the Arc restaurants.
Great.
So I worked at Ernie's, and that was kind of changed my life because that's where I met Cynthia Corey when she started dating Tom Papa.
Yes.
He's a phenomenal comic.
I just did his radio show with Fortune Feimster.
Yeah. It's such a great show. So that was, I got insurance. I worked there for 4 years.
Insurance?
Yeah, because it was Ark Restaurants.
Okay.
And they had, it was like corporate America, but the restaurant wasn't that corporate. It was all like MFA grad people from Yale. They'd like sing and dance on the shifts. It was the greatest job ever.
So you had a blast.
I had a blast. And then Stand Up New York was right there,
I think that's the first.
So is that the first place you ever did stand-up?
I think Boston Comedy Club is the first place I did stand-up.
Oh, my God. I don't know how we didn't overlap.
I might have been stand-up New York, but I did it. I met with Carrie Hoffman.
Yeah.
And that's Tim. That's
stand-up New York.
I lived right up near there.
Yeah.
I lived on 83rd and Columbus.
So the restaurant was between 79th and 80th on Broadway. Cynthia was doing stand-up at the time. And I would be on my shift. And if I couldn't – if I had a spot – I would run in my uniform. I'd take my apron off, do a set. They would cover and run back to the restaurant.
Were you there when I was like 80 Miles and Bobby Tisdale and Zach
Galifianakis
and Lisa
DeLarios? That's the first year I started.
And John Cockrell.
Yeah.
And John Viner.
Yep. I know all those guys.
And then it was like the next level up, it was like Sue Costello.
Yep.
And then there was that guy she was dating who was Italian that opened the Gotham Comedy Club.
Chris.
Chris, what's his last name?
Masilli.
Yeah.
So I started at Gotham doing 6:30 pre-shows.
Yeah.
And I'd bring three people. And Sue was there all the time. And now
she
I've known Sue for
me.
She was so scary.
She was scary. She's warmed up a lot. She was
totally
scary.
warmed up.
Yeah. Because she was also really good. I mean, she was, I remember she had development deals.
Oh, she was it back then. And then I remember going to the bathroom and I came out. Now, I don't know if she's dating Chris.
Yeah.
She was cleaning up the sink area. And I just seen her on stage. I was like, why is she cleaning up the sink area? And then with that thick Boston accent, Chris is my boyfriend. We got to clean up the closet. Like, I was oh my God.
It's amazing.
I was so nervous around her.
So, where your first set ever was at the New York Comedy Club?
At New York Comedy Club.
How did you do?
It was, I think, probably terrible.
Yeah, mine was
terrible. I just remember being like, I did it a couple times that it didn't go well, but I remember being like, I love this, and I just need to take some time and learn about stand-up. But
how did
I was,
you do that?
What I did was I just wrote, and then I followed Judy Gold and Jim Gaffigan around New York City. And I'm not kidding. I went to so many different clubs.
Were you friends with them? Or were you just
in
the lineup? You would just watch them?
Those were two of my favorite.
And you would just watch them?
And I would just watch them and watch them. And then, just watch a lot of stand-up. And then I came back like 5 months later, did a set at New York Comedy Club.
Did Judy Gold pass away? No.
Judy Gold?
No. There was another Gold. There was a different woman. Never mind.
Oh.
No. There was another woman.
No, God. No.
No, God. There was another woman who my friend wrote a show about that he was friends with her. She was also a groundling, and her name was either Judy or her last name was Gold, and I was getting
Oh, okay. No.
Okay, never mind. Judy's, it's not the same person.
I would lose my fucking mind.
I'm so sorry. Sorry, Judy Gold. Sorry, Judy Gold fans. I'm sorry, everybody.
Judy, in fact, is, I would think, better than ever. I mean, she's... she's amazing.
So you followed them around, and you're like, okay, what's possible. I'm watching what's possible.
That's the greatest thing about it. I mean, you went through it.
Yeah.
Look at those shows that we were on. I was like, oh my God, these are the greatest comedians in the world.
When I look back on, and again, I do talk about this in the book, but like when I got to Chicago, I started before New York. I was in Chicago
when I was
19, and I had never had any desire to do improv, but I landed at this place, the Improv Olympic Theater, and like, the house team at the time was Adam McKay, who went on to go write Anchorman and won an Oscar for the Big Short.
Yeah.
And then it was future UCB founders, Matt Besser and Ian Roberts. And it was like the people that were there. It was like Ali Farnock. It was just Laura Kraft, who went on to go. Horatio Sands. It was Rachel Dratch. It was just like this. Everyone was so good, and it was all before they went to Second City, so like it was like they were at the height of their powers, but nobody, like the second they got to Second City, then they all got picked to go to New York to either be on SNL or like The Daily Show or whatever. But like watching who was there when I was 19, seeing what was possible was like, wow, look at them go.
Yeah,
look at them go.
But it's so inspiring. I mean,
yeah, it was the best.
And in New York, you would just go from club to club. And And then when I started doing pre-shows at Caroline's, you have to bring like 10 people on a Monday night,
right.
You know, Andy Engel, those shows.
Yeah.
You know, it went really well, and I would always bring people. So he let me just come into Caroline's, and when my favorite people came into town, I watched them. I'd go in the back and watch, like Brian Regan, still to this day, one of my favorite comics. I watch him extensively every time
he's
came
so good.
In. He's amazing.
Who was that guy that had the
Wanda
Bringer
Sykes.
Shows? Dustin. Who was that guy?
Dustin Chaffin.
Dustin Chaffin.
Okay, so
I did the Dustin show.
I love Dustin Chaffin. So Justin Chaffin.
Yeah.
For the last 10 years, is with Leah Bonema.
They're dating.
I can never remember how to pronounce her last name. I've gotten to know her through her trips back to LA, and I'm obsessed with her. She's wonderful. They've been dating 10 years.
I can't believe we did not know each other.
I know.
Who was your comedy buddy? Who was your comedy?
Jessica Kirsten.
Great.
Jessica Kirsten,
who's
just,
so funny.
Well, this is going to air later.
Yeah.
But check out her, Bill Burr produced her Comedy Central special.
That's amazing.
It came out.
It came out last night. It got great reviews.
Yeah, she's amazing. I mean, she should have had that special 10 years ago.
That's right.
You know? Isn't it kind of interesting? Like, she's been doing comedy probably 20 plus years.
Yes. Yeah.
And, like, kills every single time she's on stage.
Yeah.
But she's not on television.
Right.
And just got a special.
Right.
That's what I mean.
No, it's, yeah.
It's impossible to follow her.
I think it's also... some of the people who you're like, oh, I don't want to go after. Don't make me go after them. They're
hysterical.
Too good.
Hysterical. Yeah, it was Karen Bergreen, Marion Grodin, Jessica Kirsten. Those were like, buddies. And then when I started doing this guy, Ron Poole, had a show called Pool Party. That was a real game changer for me because that was every Friday and Saturday in Midtown. And that's where I met a bunch of gay comics.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was a game changer.
When did you come out? So I remember hearing about this.
I didn't come out on stage until maybe 8 years in.
I remember you saying that, like, you were working with people who knew who you were working at a restaurant and you, like. You were talking about this with me once. How you were working on, like, there were people, like, that were, like, waiting for you to come out. And you were,
everyone was waiting for me to come out. I had no idea. But, the third day in Manhattan, my sisters worked at Garage Restaurant,
which
is no longer, which is such a shame, which was, you know, heart of West Village. And there was a bartender, Marianne.
I remember this.
I sit down. This is, like, literally my third day in Manhattan.
Yes.
I sit down. Now, I am the gayest, but I have no idea. I had an inkling. At that point in time, I had an inkling.
I love
it. But when I'm not, this is not exaggeration. She said, we were talking, and she goes, oh, you play for our team.
I remember this, and you didn't know what she was talking about.
And I had no idea what she was talking about. And I literally said, Arden, I said, oh, Garage has a softball team?
Oh, my God, this is the cutest. This is the cutest. It makes me love you even more. I love you even more. And I already loved you at an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10, and now you're at like a 15. It's off the charts.
I was like 22.
You're adorable. That's the cutest.
I was so excited to play softball.
May I also just say, back in the day, no one I grew up with came out so much later. Like, it wasn't a thing. I feel like now people can come out much younger.
People are coming out when they fucking fly out of the womb.
Yeah, it's like nothing. It feels like, God, thank God, it's like not a thing. But
at the time,
we didn't have, people weren't coming out. Like, it just wasn't as common. Now it's like not a thing.
It was not encouraged even remotely.
No.
I mean,
no.
It was shameful. It was terrible.
It was just
bad.
Sort of like a non-issue. Yeah. It's like, oh, nobody's gay. We know 10%, but not really. Like, it just was like a non-thing.
Best friend in high school, Becky, second base, shagging the shortstop.
Yeah.
2 years older. I knew, but I had no, I have since probably apologized 790 times in my life because I knew, but I had no vocabulary.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a vocabulary if she was shagging the shortstop and it was a guy. You know what I mean?
Well,
so it's just Irish Catholic, push it down till your ankles explode.
So she said, you play for our team. You're like, you have a softball team.
And I said, you have a softball team?
This is the best thing ever.
And she goes, oh, you'll figure it out.
Was she cute?
I mean, I said, oh.
Oh, my God.
And I remember going,
huh.
There's not much to figure out. You either have a softball team or you don't have a softball team.
Please tell me you say this on stage. You talk about this on stage.
No, I don't.
This
but
is
I just was like,
it's
this
amazing.
Is, what am I going
to
figure out? I'm either,
you need
oh, no,
to talk
no, that's what I said. That's what I said before I went out and I was like, I had that thought. I said to her, I said, oh, do I have to work at Garage to be eligible for the team?
I can't even.
I was
this.
Literally
I love this
trying
so
to get
much.
Information.
Yeah, you were like, how do I sign up? Do I buy a jersey? Can I buy a jersey?
Because I'm not going to work here, but if you need extra, I remember saying, if I'm not going to work here, but if you need extra players. And oh then she God. Said, oh, you'll figure it out.
This
and
is
I
the most
go,
lovable
I can't
thing.
Figure it out until you give me the information.
Oh my God.
You either have a team or you don't.
Oh my God. You're like, where's the team? Oh. I want to play
for
your team.
I was like, I have
team.
A club. I'm ready to go. Are we going to do this or not?
I want to play for your team, yeah. bitch. Why are you not letting me play for your team?
I mean...
And then what happened?
And then a couple years later, I made out with a lady who worked, whose brother worked at the garage.
Who initiated it?
Yes. It was the clearest. I can't remember how I even put my pants on yesterday, but I'll remember this moment for the rest of my life. Still at the garage.
Love it.
Going to see some friend's band. I had 28 gin and tonics.
Love
just
this.
The right amount of gin.
Loving it.
I grab her and I said, oh, let's go over to this place.
Yeah.
I know she's gay.
Love it.
We go to the band place. My sisters are there. All our friends are there.
Love it.
I go to the bathroom. She follows me into the bathroom, pushes me up against the bathroom stall. We make out, come out of the bathroom gay.
That's the best thing I've ever
And that
heard.
Was it. With no one to tell.
Oh my God.
Hammered. I was like, I went into the bathroom straight, came out gay,
oh
no
God.
One available for talking.
Who did you eventually, who was the first to hear?
I just was like, and so I lived in Brooklyn with my best friend, Carrie.
Oh my God.
Still didn't tell her.
Love it.
Didn't do anything for like a year.
Yeah.
Then started sort of hanging out with this woman.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I have to tell her. And I said, Carrie, I've been making out, get Becky, maybe gay. She goes, oh, you're the gayest. Okay, great. Can we get over this?
Oh, you're the gayest.
That was it. I was like, oh, okay. She's like, yeah. Ugh, God, I've been waiting for you to tell me. It's so annoying. So do you like her? Like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, all right. And then I called my other really good friend, Adrian, and I said, I've got something to tell you. Like, and I was shaking. And I go, I'm gay. And her reaction was, she screamed. And she goes, ah! Like screaming at the top of her lungs.
So you had just nothing but good news.
Nothing but good news, and then I could tell my sisters.
How was your parents?
Less than thrilled.
Yeah.
But fine. I just knew it was going to be super, super awkward.
Are they religious?
The most Catholic of all Catholics.
Right. Okay. So,
but my mom asked me, Mary Foley asked me if I was gay.
Oh, okay.
And I rerouted the conversation. It was 8 a.m. I'd been home for a week, and I was taking an Amtrak train from Rhode Island back to New York at maybe 10:30.
Love that train.
8 a.m. I'd been with her for the whole week.
The Acela?
Pre-Acela.
It's too expensive anyway.
Yeah, it's too expensive. And so I kind of rerouted the conversation. And
so she asked
finally,
you. She asked you.
She probably knew the whole time.
And she wanted to make it okay for you. Okay,
That's my mom dinging.
No, I'm going to turn that. It was just in case Paget arrives. I should just tell her, will you text her to text you? That's what we'll do.
Is she joining?
No, she's in a half an hour, but sometimes she shows up early, and the thought of Paget, holding up Paget, locking her out. No. Okay, we're back. So I'll turn
but
my
anyway,
ring off.
Yeah, so it was awkward, and she was like, you know, brought up kids stuff, and then she's like, well, I'm devastated, and I was like, I knew you would be, and then 2 seconds later, she's like, we have to return the movie at Blockbuster, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, keep it moving.
Went
keep it
home,
moving.
Returned the movie, went home.
Light and polite.
Walked through the door, and I was shaking, like, what is she going to say? And she's like, I cut out an article on Billy Crystal and how, for my AARP magazine about how he does. And I was like, oh, all right, this will probably be it. And then nothing. And then 2 months later, I was dating someone. I was like, can I bring Shelly home for Thanksgiving? And she goes, yeah, of course. And that was it.
And you never talked about it with your dad.
Never spoke about it with Dick Foley.
This is amazing.
He was traveling so much for work. He was like literally on a fishing boat out of Rhode Island, out of Point Judith.
Yeah.
And the day I moved in with my girlfriend Karen, I said, he's like, what are you doing today? I said, Dad, I'm moving in with Karen. Didn't Mom tell you? And he goes, right, yes, yes, right, yep, 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 right, right,
yep,
right,
yep,
yep. Right, and it went on for like a minute and a half.
Oh my God!
And I was like, I think he was just trying came to be
cool. I think he's trying to be cool too.
Yeah.
You know what? When I watched that movie, The Queen, about Princess Diana's death, and people were all mad at the Queen and how she's always like, "Let's go for the walkies with the corgis." Like, my family is so let's, and I kind of there's a certain appreciation to, like, okay, we good?
Yeah.
We good? And like it's so not this world of like. Like, look, it's important. Yeah. I'm glad that in my real life I can talk about things with my friends and my, like, but, like, there is something to be said for, like, Okay. Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Everything. Okay. Right. We're never going to talk about this again?
Yeah.
We're good. Okay. Okay. Just so like that's just.
That never... was your family as well?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's New England.
New England.
That is full New England. Yeah.
Even it's New York. I think it's Rhode Island. Irish. I think it's Catholic. Yeah. It's you push.
Yeah. Like keep
you
it
push
moving.
It down.
You just keep it
you
moving.
Keep it moving.
Keep it polite, a little bit formal, and.
Yeah.
And just change the subject and go to TJ Maxx.
Weather, Filene's basement.
Yeah, Filene's basement. We're going to go to Michael's Crafts.
Oh,
we're going to go buy a glue gun. We're going to get some pom-poms.
Let's get some ornaments for the tree.
We're going to get a new throw pillow.
Shit moving. Yeah. How was your year? My entire year was great.
My year was
Happy
so
New
good.
Year.
My year was so good.
It was fine.
My year was so good.
Fine.
I appreciate when nobody like there is something to it.
I think the troublesome is now in the romantic area. Like my partner is always like, I need more.
Oh,
I get it.
That's hard.
So it's been better as
I've never dated anybody that needed more, thank God.
No?
I did date one guy, but he sucked and he didn't think I was open enough He was also awful. So if somebody needed a lot from me, I don't think I'd be the right person.
Yeah. Pass.
My river, I'm 2 ounces of fluid and you're a 16-ounce cup. this is how much water is in there. I can't give you more. Oh, my God. No, they did not. No, they did not.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Can I ask you a question?
Anything.
And I know you can just tell me when to
start. We have a half hour.
You're writing the book, what was the one thing that you didn't plan on talking about that you talked about, or like the biggest kind of discovery?
I will say there was two things. One, the publisher requested a chapter on how I got from a town with a general store to being on television at the age of 22. Like, how did I – what happened? What did I actually do, like, to have go from stars in my eyes to actually having a job on a show? And I found it to be – so uncomfortable to write.
Yeah.
Because it's like to hear the voice in your head of like, who care? Like, who the fuck do you think you like? Oh, okay, Meryl Streep. This is how I, here's how I did it. You want to like, you two want to be covered in cat, like, but I have to say rereading it and like reading it back, like as I've been like, you know,
yeah,
readying it, to see like, oh, if I was little me and somebody had grown up in a little town, I would want to know the nuts and the bolts of this led to this, led to this. That chapter physically, I kept blacking out when I was writing it. Like, it would like take me, the voices in my head were so loud of like, who do you think you are?
That's
like, who, oh, okay, Jennifer Lawrence. Like, yeah. This is how you got to be the number 11 on the call sheet on a sitcom. You know what I mean? It was like very, very, I felt very braggy. It was very anti-New England, like not flashy, like not braggy. Yeah. And then I think the other thing that's like, I mean, the book is very funny, but like, I never in a million years, again, when I wrote the proposal, like, I actually think I've written a comedy version of like the Year of Magical Thinking. Like, at the very end, I never thought that I would be an expert on grief or like, yeah, for my own, like, and I would never thought I would, as a, growing up in a house where people never talk about things, that I would actually, like, if somebody else is going through something, at the very end, I have, like, here's things that have helped me. It's never what I have ever would have imagined that any book that I would have anything to do with would be, like, how to deal in a real way, in an honest way. Like, that was certainly not what I ever thought I would be writing about.
Yeah.
Ever.
It sounds awesome.
I'm really proud of it.
I love that. I mean,
it was day one of Grief Island. Well, yeah. I write, actually, it's funny, like, so there's, unfortunately, two death chapters. Yeah. There's, like, my dad and then my mom.
You know, I can't wait to read
but
that.
I talk a lot about how the podcast, very much so, has been surprisingly a large part of like putting Humpty back together again.
Yeah.
Because this thing, this seemingly silly thing that's about hairless people falling in love, you know, like that in the strangest way has helped me to get to know people. I've never played sports before, so it's given me like a sport and a team, something that's sort of meditative when I'm watching The Bachelor and taking my obsessive notes like a serial killer. Like, that this has been very much been a large part of putting Humpty back together again.
Well, that's fantastic.
How are you dealing with your dad?
It just seems like the summer was kind of brutal, but I'm just very lucky that we had that small window where he was okay to move them into my sister's
house. I know that
was
a long time coming.
That was really, it was a real rough couple of months because I didn't think we could physically get him on a plane.
How did you do that?
He came out of the hospital healed enough to literally physically get him on a plane. I went back to Florida like every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Moved. Megan took a week off. We got the, literally put them on a plane, cleaned the house, put the stuff in the U-Haul, put the stuff in the car and drove.
You drove it.
We drove.
From Florida to Texas?
Well, we had a moving van, but the rest of the stuff we like gave away, we sold, we put in a car, and Megan and I drove the car from Florida to Texas.
Because you're quiet about it. You're quiet about it.
Well, it's
awful.
It just sucks. And also, like, the state of the union, life is hard for everybody. Yeah. I'm going to be like, let me tell you.
No, I'm not,
you know,
scared.
What I mean?
Yeah.
But now it's the I always have to like try to stay positive, but the wonderful thing is like my sister's there.
Are they in Waco?
They're safe. They're in a house. Like, he's back in the hospital, but you know, we're coming in 10 days for the holidays. Like, he's where he's supposed to be.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Are they in Waco?
They're in Waco.
Okay, I drove to Waco when I was filming in Dallas because I'm obsessed with Fixer Upper.
Oh my God.
So Rebecca Romijn, also obsessed with Fixer Upper, and Jerry O'Connell rented like an F-150 and we drove a gigantic truck.
Wait,
from
what
Dallas.
Was this?
This is when I did that horror movie, Satanic Panic.
Oh, right.
We drove off. We had one day off. We'd been shooting nights. So we slept till like 3 p.m., rented an F-150, drove to Waco to look at, to go to the Magnolia Silos.
Oh my God.
And, I got to tell you, we were driving all over Waco and we're like, we could live here. Like, it's cute.
It is really cute.
It's really cute.
And just in the 4 years Tara's been there, oh, it feels like it's been transformed.
Chip and Joanna Gaines are nailing it. Every house. And I am even such a psycho that I went online and I got like a driving map of like, this was this house. We drove from house to house, and I was like, we found the shotgun house that they bought for like $13,000, and then like renovated. Like, I'm like, why don't we all just move to fucking Waco?
Well,
like,
when I took my partner there, right, I was doing shows in Austin. She came to me in Austin. We drove to Waco.
It's the best. I loved it. It's very religious, but it's great.
That's the only thing. It's a little bit too conservative.
It's very conservative.
But we met. You know, Sarah's like, let's buy a house. You can buy a house, like,
I know.
You can buy a palatial estate for like $300,000.
And they're so cute.
They're so cute.
Chip and Joanne Gaines really have nailed it. I thought, I have to say, the silos, again, they were closed, but Rebecca Romijn and Jerry Cuddle and I were one of like 20 people outside of the closed silos, like taking selfies in front, like, and they were so much.
I thought they were going to call, like, those two should have called Chip and Joanna and like open it up.
Yeah, they should have.
Come on.
Come on. You're a fucking supermodel. If you've worn the wings, you can get into the fucking saddle. I will say that like it was less kitschy. It was like so cool and cute. Like
it's really cool and cute.
Loved it.
Yeah.
So your parents must be happy there.
They are. And you know what? Since Tara, I think that's her name, right? Yeah, my sister.
Tala.
Slash, she's a professor at Baylor. So they have gone to like the orchestra at Baylor. A choir, a baseball, like they
love
using.
It. That's
you know
amazing.
What I mean? They have
they're
so
living
many
their
amazing
best lives.
Facilities.
That's,
yeah,
that's awesome.
The Philharmonic, like Baylor's amazing. So,
what were holidays like growing up in the Foley household? Give me Christmas morning.
Oh, well, first of all, most people, I feel lucky that like. Everyone's like, what are you doing for the holidays? I'm like, can't wait.
I know. I love Christmas.
We always
love
are together.
I love any holiday. I love lights.
Yeah.
I love whatever. I love a holiday party.
I love it all. I'm
I love
a
like
huge
the weird, like
fan.
All the clove mochas that like any kind
all of it.
Anything.
I've been killing it in my office, bringing in all the office decorations because I've never had an office.
Yeah.
I've also discovered the 99-cent store.
Oh my God. That's where I get so many of my, I throw
it's
a big
amazing.
Holiday party every year and I get a lot of shit at the 99-cent. It's the best way. If you don't, out there, guys, you're probably listening to this, it's probably mid-May, but if you are like, for whatever holiday's coming up, if you're like, I want to start a whatever collection, a 4th of July collection.
Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th.
Halloween,
Flight Day, Hanukkah,
you get whatever you go to the 99-cent store, get a nice base, and then you can pick and choose some booze from like Anthropologie or whatever on sale.
Or
just
Target,
go to Pier 1,
whatever.
Go to Pier 1, get it on sale.
Your nice base at 99-cent store is my full base. I load up, stick it on the office walls.
That was my full base for years until I started throwing a birthday/Christmas party.
Well, no, not for, but I'm just saying, for the office?
Yeah, obviously.
No need to look any further.
No, and by the way, it like you can get like 15 silver balls for a dollar.
Yeah. The best is I kept looking at the back of the items for a price.
That's right.
And then I was like,
"That's right.
Oh, okay.
Good thing you're beautiful. It's a good thing you're beautiful.
I'm on camera."
Can I just say, I've traveled with Aaron Foley, and I've said this before, and I've gone out numerous times. You are like a magnet for straight ladies who, like,
straight
have
ladies
like,
love me.
They have like one glass of Chablis, and all of a sudden, who was it? We were at like some casino in Vegas.
Oh my God, that's right.
That was not on the strip. And like the manager was like, let's just say someone was, maybe Olivia Munn could throw me on the desk and make out. And like she was dating the man that like ran the casino, but she kept playing a fun game with Aaron and I. Like, let's just say you made out with.
I'll make out with you.
Yeah.
Like, what's the problem? Let's do this.
It was crazy.
Then she ran.
And then she ran away. And then
she
basically was throwing herself at
me. She's like, we're going to do this. You're like, okay. She's like, how dare you? That was the night you got so drunk and you were like, I unfriended everyone on Facebook.
Oh my God. We can't talk about that.
No, that
night.
Was an
we
incredible. That was a
remember
mess.
Remember I called you this morning in a total panic?
Yeah. And then you undid everything that you'd done. It was a disaster. It was like 4 in the morning. I didn't even know you that well. It was like, you, me, and Marilyn Rice Cub? Maybe?
Yes.
Was it?
Wait.
Was it? You, me, and or Christina Pazinski. Also yes. Funny. Both funny.
Yeah.
And so Aaron Foley, big dream, 2020. What would your dreams be for 2020?
The dream for 2020 is I want to continue writing on a show.
Yeah.
Hopefully
great.
On One Day at a Time. If it airs, well, it'll be airing when this comes out because it'll air in the spring.
Great.
It'll start airing March of 2020.
Loving it.
I'm hoping the dream is that it gets picked up for season 5 and I get hired.
Love this.
For season 5. So it's been an amazing experience so far. And
are you still touring?
Nope. I've stopped. I'm just doing local shows for stand-up.
Okay.
But now I'm going to take a nice long break because it's exhausting having a full-time job. I wake up at 6:40 every morning.
Yeah, you're tired.
My life is just kind of...
Yeah.
And I have never taken a break in 20 years and I'm taking a break.
Great. I love it.
So I'll resume in a couple months.
That's fine.
And
I took a break. Yeah. I canceled all my shows this year. I was like, I'm going to give myself one full year from my mom.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Arden, you're working around the clock.
I was like, I can't do it. I was like, I'll give myself 1 year and then I'll do live podcasts and stuff like that. But, 1 year and then I'll get back on the horse. I can't do it.
Yeah. Well, that's just you being healthy and taking care of yourself.
Yeah. It's like, I can't.
It's just this weird shift where my whole identity is stand up and now I'm like, who am I? But it feels totally great.
Yeah.
Just to take a breather. And then I move in with my partner February 1st.
Oh!
I'm going to force her into marriage because that's romance.
I love that.
And,
that's how you do it. That's how marriages happen.
Yeah, just to be writing and to be healthy and to be with Sarah is one. That's my goal.
Final two questions. Were you popular in high school?
I was.
I knew you were. Popular. Of course you were. You were popular. Benedict was popular and Wells was popular.
Yeah.
I bet you Lauren Lopkins was popular.
But like, but not mean girl pop.
No,
like, you know what I mean?
You were well-liked.
Fun. That was fun, and I played sports, and I liked
to... Were you prom queen?
I was not prom queen. I was... Becky and I was... she was second base. I was left field, and we were vice president 4 years.
Yeah, you were.
So we ran the school.
No, I knew it. We have so many, like... the people we've done a few of these so far, and everybody's been popular.
I was social.
Okay, last question. Opening night, you're getting out of the limo as a contestant on The Bachelorette. What do you wear?
Full football outfit. And I do an aggressive forward roll, catch the ball, spike it, and I go, let's do this. and I take the helmet off, and I go like this.
And you've got like black hair,
longer hair.
Yes.
I've got black under my eyes.
Yeah.
And I'll have to come up with some sort of
I love it.
I like spiking the ball. Hopefully, I don't hit her when I spike the ball.
No, but if you do though. You go, I can give
and
you
I go, oh god!
Mouth.
Then I just give her like a bloody nose, and then I have to try to pick up my back. Some sort of football sequence, I think.
I like that.
Yeah,
you keep paired tight capris.
Or the other thing would be full Saturday Night Fever, where I come out,
throw
the jacket at her, the Staying Alive is on, and I just dance my way out.
Yes.
Yeah.
I picture myself, obviously, we know I'm in the short in the front, long in the back, I'm in the mullet dress, and then I'm now picturing myself doing like a barrel roll, like the Sonic Hedgehog, I roll up with like sparks, like I figure out how to have like sparks, because I'm like rolling so hard.
Okay.
And that I attempt to do a split, but I'm really inflexible, so then I'm just kind of like stuck in my mullet, like stuck there, and then I'm like, can you give me a hand?
I like it.
Right?
I like it.
It's like, oh, she's human. She's not just awesome like a hedgehog. She's also human because she needs a hand because she's stuck. That's what I'm
I like
wear.
It. Another thing, now that you're talking, which I'm envisioning
just to piggyback,
you doing this.
Yeah, great.
Is you get out of the limo.
Great, love it.
And then you look at him.
Yes.
And you go, do you love Dirty Dancing?
Yes.
And he'll go, yeah. be like, let's do the lift.
I scream, nobody puts
just sprint.
Nobody
sprint
puts baby
right
in the corner.
And then you sprint at him.
And then I jump.
And you jump and you just hope it works out.
I just hope it works out. And then like we fall and like my snooch falls right in his face by accident. And I'm like, oops, ABC.
Face. Oh,
and
sorry.
And then they're like, she's out of control. And they're like, she's not even drinking.
Yeah. She has had a thimble.
She's had a thimble of wine and she's hammered. The Pinot Gris. She's had one thimble of Pinot Gris and she's hammered. Hammered. In conclusion, I know this will be airing later. I know we're doing draft picks next week.
Yes.
How excited are you for Peter's season?
You know, I had gotten fairly busy, thank God, the last couple of months. But when I walked into this cubbyhole,
you got excited.
Dreams, Clubhouse of Dreams.
You got excited.
I thought, oh God, I'm getting pumped.
Come to Sketchfest. It's a Sunday at 4. Fly in that morning. Come do it with me and Padgett and Rob. Just come do it. And then go back that night.
Maybe
come do it.
I mean, I want if it was Saturday, it would be no brainer.
I know
but what
this
if I
Sunday
get stuck there.
You won't get stuck,
but it is so close.
It's so close. You're not going to get stuck.
All right, let me think about that.
Great, we'll fly you up and everything.
I know. I get nervous about like the job and stuff.
I get it,
but it is.
But why don't
so
we just make
close.
Sure that you leave the stage by 5? Like, will this you just leave?
If I could take like a flight back into Burbank, actually think this could work.
Yeah, you gotta come. You gotta come. Padgett's gonna be there.
One podcast at a time.
Yeah.
Wait, Padgett's gonna be there?
Yeah, Padgett's gonna be there. In conclusion, Katie, Anna, what would you guys wear? What would you wear?
A really, really long gown that people need to like carry.
Handlers.
Yeah. Are you gonna bring handlers, like children? Are you gonna have like four, like 6 4-year-olds dressed in like foot servants, like mice, fancy mice?
Yeah, like clear like immigrant children that I'm like, I'm giving them opportunity.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
they would love that. Great. That would make ABC look woke and also not woke. Katie, what are you doing out of the limo for Peter?
I've never thought of that.
You have to think of it. What are you going to wear for Peter?
Peter, you have to dress as an airplane.
I would just or a sexy stewardess,
an actual airplane, like have wings. Because remember, like he was pretending to be an airplane in that one scene in the last season. Yeah. Like they're going down the jetway and he's like, brr. I would just dress as a fucking airplane.
Oh my God. Yes. I would piss you off. I would come in after you and I would hand glide in and knock him over. I would like start from some other house in Calabasas and have somebody like attach a cord to me and drive me down PCH like on the back of a Hummer trying to get speed.
That is
and then
entrance.
I would release that the clip that would attach me to the Hummer and then I would just like dive bomb in and like short shorts.
Yeah.
And like a real titty top and
maybe
like
a cape
and then I would write sexy stewardess alert and then I would like come dive bombing in and then and then put my snooch near his face.
I'm gonna revise my answer and go as the person that cleans the plane right after the plane lands. I'm gonna go in a full onesie with goggles.
That's right.
And like just with a couple garbage bags and be like, everybody off, we gotta get this plane for the next flight.
Okay, I'm gonna revise mine. I'm gonna be the guys like out on the flight tarmac. I'm gonna have the glow thing and I'm gonna have it go right to my crotch. I'm gonna wave it in. I'm gonna go right to my crotch. And then at my crotch, I'm gonna have attached like when Katy Perry would tour and shoot whipped cream her boobs.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have a windmill and it'll say like knock knock buttercup and it's gonna spin around and then it's gonna have like a video screen of his mom cheering for him fucking on my leg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna revise.
Okay, great.
I'm gonna revise.
Great.
Okay. I'm gonna be dressed and I'm gonna drive up in the gas oil tankers that refuel the planes. And I'm gonna come out with the hose from my vagina going back to the gas tanker and be like, are you ready to take a spill? I don't know.
I'm gonna revise. I'm gonna come in as present day Val Kilmer. Float it like really fucking float. exploded, and I'm gonna be topless with my tits flying, my like almost D cups flying, and I'm gonna go, "Are you, hey Ace? Are you ready to play? Are you ready to do the blue scene with me? But like beach ball version?" And then it's gonna be like volleyball. I'm gonna have a volleyball and like a sand pit, and then I'm gonna be like, "Tell me about it, stud." And then I'm gonna play both the part of Meg Ryan and present day fat Val Kilmer, and then I'm gonna have Suri Cruise and Tom Cruise arrive, and then I'm gonna be like you're my goose man, and then I'm gonna tackle them.
Feel the need for speed.
Yeah.
All right, last revision. I'm gonna get out of the limo and go, "I'm gay." Get back in the limo and then just keep it moving.
That's the way you keep it moving. Guys, I don't know what else you want from a bonus podcast. You weren't expecting this. I don't know what you're waiting for. And your payment could just be one purchase.
Buy the book.
Little Compton. I'm not going to lie to you.
She's hanging on by a thread, you guys. I got paid
like $14 to write it. So like, yep. At least make me look popular.
Everybody get the book.
Just get the book.
I'm going to rob a bank. I'm going to buy 8,000 copies. It's going to go straight to number one.
God, I'm going to rob a bank next to, and then I'm going to go to jail. And they'd be like, "You can't have your earnings because you robbed a bank."
The Citibank on Glendale Boulevard. I'm coming for you. I'm giving you a heads up.
I'm robbing the Chase Bank on the corner of Los Feliz Boulevard and Hillhurst. I'm coming for you.
SAG Credit Federal Union in Burbank. Yeah. I know where you are.
Apple Bank. On the Upper West Side in Manhattan on 73rd and Broadway. Even though you're a small bank, I'm still going to rob you. Santander Bank in the Commons in Little Compton, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I'm going to come do a book signing, but before I do that, I'm going to rob you, and I'm going to buy myself 4,000 of my own books that I've already read.
Phil and Ann's gas station on the corner of 4th and Main in Rhode Island. I'm coming for it. We're going to rob you at gunpoint, and then we're going to buy artist books and make her number one seller.
And then I'm going to go, hey, it's me. Knock, knock. Knock, knock, Buttercup. You want to fuck me in a
windmill? I fucked your son in high school.
I fucked your mom in a windmill. But I'm going to have like a stocking on my head, but I'm going to have great hair underneath.
Oh, I am sweating in joy.
Erin Foley, what? I really feel like we went to nationals on this.
We did.
Passed regionals. We passed state. We went right to nationals. And guess what? We had full heart, clear eyes, and we couldn't lose. We left it on the field.
We left it on the field.
I think we left it on the field.
You leave it on the dance floor and you leave it on the field.
I feel like I know you all the better. So when I meet you on my dance floor next week, you're going to know I mean fucking business.
I'm going to look at you. Our eyes are going to connect and be like, "We're going to leave it on the dance floor and we're going to fucking rob a bank. Happy New Year."
Thank you guys for listening. Erin Foley, I love you.
Love you right back.
I'll see you in San Francisco. Bye.
So good. I just got one little question for you, girl.
Will you accept this rose? Oh, will you accept this rose into your world? Oh, will you accept this rose?
Accept This Rose is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.